This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio. It's time for Issues and Ideas, a show that features a wide variety of local voices sharing their thoughts and perspectives. Camp Natoma opened as a campfire girls' camp in 1941, and today it offers all campers the chance to sleep under the stars and more.
What is it that makes you want to come back to Camp Natoma? They say, I can be my real self because I'm accepted for who I am.
Also, there's still time to enjoy some fresh persimmons this winter.
The only way you can eat a fresh Aichia persimmon that is palatable is if it is so ripe that it has the consistency of a water balloon.
These stories and more coming up on Issues and Ideas. Good afternoon. It's Monday, January 10th, 2022. I'm Carol Tangeman. The San Luis Obispo County Library has a new jobs training program. KCBX contributor Brian Reynolds has more.
Hello. Today we're joined by Sharon Coronado, coordinating librarian for the County of San Luis Obispo Libraries. Welcome, Sharon.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for having me.
We've talked before about wonderful library programs, and of course, self-declare, I was the former library director, so I'm a big believer in libraries. There's an exciting new service that the library is going to be offering soon. It has to do with the federal recovery funds. Could you talk about that and the American Rescue Plan Act and how that's benefiting the local library?
Yes. Actually, it's services, more than just one. Through the American Rescue Plan Act, the state library is providing access for all local libraries in the state of California if they choose to participate. Access to 6 digital platforms, and this is really designed to help communities recover from the pandemic.
Let's step back a little bit to give some context to this. I think it's an apt name for public libraries or a way to describe them is the People's University. They are institutions free of charge that provide access to everyone to a whole array of services ranging from entertainment to how to do it to recipes. But in particular, I'm thinking public libraries have a long, long history of helping employers and employees get connected and do a better job. What would be some examples of what our public library has done to help job seekers in the past years?
That's a great question, and thank you for speaking so highly of us. I do sort of consider us the middle ground between, you know, paying for college or like adult education. We offer free asynchronous, so you do it at your own pace, types of platforms, which is a nice middle ground for busy adults. So historically, and some of these things we incorporate even as we go more digital, we have always provided books on resume writing and writing cover letters, which are still very, very important and crucial to getting interviews and to landing a job. We have always offered computer access and Wi-Fi access. So for equity in services, we allow people to come in and use our computers, and we have software that helps them to create a really nice resume. We also pay for services from the library that patrons can have for free, and that includes some resume reviews and some interview help. And then there's always also the partnerships that libraries seek out, and we nurture those partnerships with other agencies in our area. And specific to workforce development, we partner with Eckerd Connects. A lot of that is information sharing, so that the public coming through our doors, we like to keep Eckerd Connects literature on the table so that they can pick that up, and then we let Eckerd Connects know the resources that we have for job seekers, and then they send them our way too.
I remember in the past, of course, I'm mostly, my career was about print and not so much on the internet, but we would have a vast array to offer for free of what they call civil service tests, everything from the SAT and GRE to various professional jobs and people could take practice tests. I know that also many of the libraries have, especially the downtown library in San Luis Obispo, have small rooms where people can go and practice things or even meet with a partner and go over things. So that's, it's not just something that has to be done in front of a computer terminal or in front of the general public, but where there's a quiet nook where people can work on these things as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We offer space too. Yes, quiet space. And we also, if you do, you know, want to do it in the comfort of your own home, we have Chromebooks that we lend out. We have internet hotspots. So we try to meet people where they are.
I think one of the great skills of librarians is trying to address each query, each customer on an individual basis, because the very same person might have different needs depending on the day of the week or a problem that they have faced. I also think, too, that there's something super important about what we're doing here today and what the library is doing in the background is that historically, the vast majority of the people have not availed themselves of public library services when they have a question that they can't answer. We still have people who are daunted by computers, and the vast array of services for some is a cornucopia, and others it's a little scary. So librarians are trained to help people become comfortable and knowledgeable. And, of course, the staff are trained on these things themselves. They could explain it to somebody else, how to use it.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, we have users that are all ages, ranges of using the library for entertainment or for the more crucial things like being connected to services. Yes, the people that you see when you walk in the door, we want you to ask us questions. We don't want you to be afraid to use the library. We know that there's a lot of resources available. If anything, we'll scare you with a little too much information, but we will never scare you away from asking us a question. It really is important to connect with a staff member from the library with an initial question, because I think our main challenge is messaging out all of the resources that we have available. It never surprises me when I'm out in the world and somebody says, oh, what do you do for a living? And I say, oh, I'm a librarian. And they're like, oh my gosh, really? You know, oh, I love audiobooks. I, you know, get a subscription from Audible. And I say, well, you should save your money. And, you know, and then I start telling them all about library resources. And people are so shocked about all the things that we have. Right now with the pandemic, it's not just about people staying home and needing DVDs. There's a lot of other things happening with families that we're aware of, and we're trying to meet the needs of people. We have some other things on the horizon that we're hoping to also roll out with some of our partners, and, you know, even offering some like grief support, some support groups and things like that. So definitely partnering with other agencies gives our communities not just what's available in the library, but the amount of information that we can provide to really be able to connect people to help them out.
I think another aspect of libraries that are, before we delve into the specifics of this grant, but if you're a property owner in the county, you pay probably less than $50 a year for library services. If you borrow two books, that makes your investment. You've already broke even. And anything else you do that on that is free. As much as you want to use, you could come into the library or borrow, you know, books every day. And that idea of an unlimited service at little or no cost is unusual. Also, the fact that you can go into library buildings for free and be out of the weather and mm-hmm. be safe and people will help you as best as they can. And that's an unusual thing, too. And I think with the pandemic and the internet, the ability to either go to a library and be safe and use materials or use quite a bit of those in your own home is just not something people expect. And it's a wonderful thing, but it does take us to do those shout outs. Let's talk a little bit about the grant itself. And I'm going to read the name of it again. It's the American Rescue Plan Act grant, or ARPA, that took from the federal recovery monies about a little over $4.3 million distributed to public libraries around the state. And through this program, they're going to have access to a handful of online services: Coursera, Get Set Up, Learning Express. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of those and what those do for a job seeker?
Before I delve into it, I want to tell people where to go to find this. So
sure.
Head on over to slowlibrary.org, and then you'll see the word reference, and then you'll see online learning and you want to click on that, and then that will get you to all of these platforms that we're talking about today. This is a huge project because I do manage the implementation of our databases and online resources with the library. And just getting one platform ready to go, it's a whole package of skill sets. Like, you have to market it, you have to, you know, get IT involved, and you have to authenticate it so that users can get onto it. So for the State Library to have given us 6 of them is a really, really big deal, and it is no small feat. So I really appreciate the smart use of funds, and they're really being equitable with these funds. So these 6 platforms, they're essentially to up-level your skill sets. There's also some fun stuff, too, like if you want to just do some creative learning, you can do that on some of these platforms as well. Several of them have different languages. Several of them have what they call gateway certifications. So that's programs for people without a college degree or, you know, little experience in a field. And some of these courses are built by leading companies like Google. And it provides an entry-level opportunity to ramp up their economic opportunities, so to speak. And again, users can log on. It's really straightforward how to get on to many of these. Some of them you do have to fill out a form, which comes to us, and then we invite you to become a learner. And then you pretty much just get started. Several of them are videos, some that we have for seniors to stay in the workforce are actually live sessions. So it runs the gamut.
Wow.
We love some of the peer-to-peer learning opportunities also that are available. And like you mentioned, the civil service tests, it's not just about getting the book and practicing the test, but it's also about the experience of taking the exam because, you know, you might be nervous. Some of these will actually score your practice tests so that you know where to put your energy in.
Very nice. I'd like to remind everyone that I am Brian Reynolds for Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today we're joined by Sharon Coronado, a coordinating librarian for the County of San Luis Obispo Public Libraries. And our topic today is to talk about an exciting free online job training resource, actually a bunch of resources, through a grant ultimately from the federal government through the State Library. If a person was unsure, they have a goal in mind, but they're not sure which database would be helpful or how to get started. Are tutorials, or can they come into the library or talk to a librarian to get help?
Absolutely. You can come in and talk to us, or if you're at slolibrary.org, there's a Ask a Librarian service, and you can get in touch with us that way. Several of these platforms do have some crossover, like resume building is in several of them. Basic digital literacy skills are in several of them. So on our website, we created descriptions for each one and then attributed to the State Library which ones are these platforms that we're talking about specifically. And then you might discover some other platforms that the library already offers that could help you in another way. But yes, to get started, you can go to slolibrary.org. You can click on Ask if you don't know where to get started at all. Just click on Ask a Librarian and say, hey, I heard something about KCBX. And actually, those come to me, so I'll know exactly what people are talking about. And we have other adult services librarians who are trained on these platforms. And like I said before, they're fairly straightforward. You put in the time when you can put in the time, and you'll see results.
I think there's another hidden issue here that is so important. I've been through it with my own kids and family members. When we took exams in the old days, it was on paper. And believe me, I think there's advantage to that. You can sort of see, you can look at the clock and you can see how many pages or questions are left easily. Taking an online exam is way different because the clock is running, but it isn't so easy to understand how much time is left, or you can go back or to flip back to a previous question you want to redo or something. And so I just think the mere act of working with computers and databases like this, but also taking exams with the clock running, practice exams, is crucial to help people improve their scores at the end.
Definitely. The brain works differently when you're writing on paper or when you're working digitally. Absolutely.
Do you have some partners in the county that you work with on issues like this, like Chambers of Commerce?
We put out our press release, and the Chamber of Commerce of course, you know, they picked it right up because they're really in the thick of what's happening in our workforce. We probably have lots of displaced workers, underemployed workers, things of that nature. We also partner, like I mentioned earlier, with Eckerd Connects. They're a very valuable partner with us. When everything closed down in 2020, we reached out to them right away and said, keep us in mind as you're moving forward and let us know what people need, because we want to be responsive to our communities.
Could you explain a little more clearly what Eckerd Connects is?
Sure. Eckerd Connects is like your local job center. So they really have their fingers on the pulse of who's hiring. And so they can connect you directly with employers who want to hire immediately because they are specific to workforce. You know, libraries, we're general about a lot of things, but Eckerd Connects is very specific to job seekers and workforce development. They also may have additional funding that can help you even if you need like a bus pass or if you need professional clothing, because you get a job at sometimes it costs you money to work. And so that's where Eckerd Connects comes in, and they are wonderfully dedicated people who are always looking for ways to get people jobs and skills.
Is it customer accessible?
Yes, absolutely. They can go directly to Eckerd Connects. And Eckerd Connects does sometimes do tabling at some of our branches, like at Arroyo Grande and San Luis. The pandemic has, you know, paused some of those activities for a while, but sometimes you'll come on site and they'll be there and they'll have folders and like little swag bags available, and they'll have like the most current job vacancies available. But if somebody doesn't know how to get in touch with them, they can certainly contact us and we can get them in touch with somebody.
Another thought about the times today versus when I grew up, and people would often have a same job maybe their whole career, you know, in working in one store or in one profession, one office. But nowadays, they change, I believe, on the average of every 4 or 5 years. So the movement there can create additional barriers for people. We're about to wrap up. Is there one or two things you'd like people to remember from our conversation today, the takeaway and how to take advantage of this wonderful new service?
It's a lot of information, and that it is okay if you get confused. The best thing to do if you want to up-level your skills, no matter where you are, if you have limited technology skills or if you're looking to get certified in some type of like computer language, these platforms will serve you trying to up-level your skill set. If it sounds like this is something that you're interested in, just go to slowlibrary.org, click on that Ask a Librarian link, and just get in touch with us. The first communication that we have, then we can ask you some more questions and we can make sure we get you to the right platform.
That is so awesome. I would like to remind everyone that I am Brian Reynolds for Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today we were joined by Sharon Coronado, Coordinating Librarian for the County of San Luis Obispo Public Libraries, discussing their new service online job training through a grant from the California State Library. Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you, Brian.
Many of us have fond memories of sleeping under the stars in the backyard or at summer camp. In North San Luis Obispo County, Camp Natoma offers that timeless experience and more.
Welcome to the Nonprofit Story. This is Dr. Consuelo Mukes. Today I have Emily Zibin, who is the Executive Director of the Friends of Natoma for the Natoma Camp. And Emily, welcome to the Nonprofit Story. I'm real excited to hear all about the camp experience.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. So, Emily, I've visited Camp Natoma. It's been a couple of years, and I know that you've updated and done some wonderful things. So let's start with a little bit about the camp, how it came to be, and what it's all about.
Camp Natoma is an outdoor 360-acre summer camp for kids. We serve primarily San Luis Obispo County children, ages 7 to 17. In week-long overnight summer camp programs. And the camp was founded in 1941 as a campfire girls camp and has grown since 1980 to be a co-ed outdoor summer camp with a focus on connecting children with nature and with each other.
I forgot about that. It was, first of all, a Campfire Girls camp.
You don't need to be affiliated with any organization. You can attend Camp Natoma. And we offer also a scholarship or financial aid program to be able to serve as many children in our community as possible. We want campers to be willing to try new things. We're very, very rustic. Kids sleep outside under the stars, and they do traditional outdoor activities, hiking, arts and crafts, archery. We have a hatchet throwing range, which is a really big hit these days. And then your nostalgic summer camp. We do a campfire program every night that's led by our high school leadership program.
First grade to 11th grade, do they come with a certain group? Can they come on their own? How does that happen?
We have open enrollment on our website, actually going on now. And you can sign up with a sibling or a friend, but we have many campers who come on their own for the first time to meet new friends and give themselves a chance to grow in independence and self-reliance and experience what it's like to be away from their traditional home life out at summer camp. We do offer custom programs completely separate from our summer program, so we can serve existing groups such as school groups and scout groups and things like that. But our traditional summer program is individual registration.
So you have some brave kids that come on up there on their own.
We do camper drop-off on Mondays in the summer, and we partner with Thatcher Winery, which is a fantastic family that has been involved with the camp for a long time. And that is where we do check-in with the camp director and our medical staff, and the kids get to get on a bright green school bus that then transports them out into the Adelaida area of Paso Robles and over several miles of very bumpy dirt road that's very exciting into the actual campsite of Camp Natoma. So they get to take a very exciting bus ride.
I remember that. I came up in someone's truck, and that is really an adventure on its own. So that's a lot of good times right there. So how long does it take to get from the load-up place up to the camp?
It's about a 40-minute bus drive. Mm-hmm. And that's mostly because the bus goes so slowly on the dirt road. Mm-hmm. Our address is on the west side of Paso Robles.
So it's not too far away, but it's far away enough to give that wonderful outdoors experience. Once you get up there, what are you going to encounter?
So each session, the campers arrive on the green bus and we gather for our first camp meeting. And that's where the kids are put into their campsite groups with their activity leader. And we have the kids sleeping in age separated areas. And they are welcomed with lots of songs and cheers and team building, and they get to set up their outdoor campsite. We have metal army cots with a dormitory mattress, and the kids bring their sleeping bags and set up in small groups. You could just imagine like what you'd think a cabin group would be. It just, instead of having cabin walls, you have oak trees surrounding your campsite.
That's wonderful.
They are outdoors. Enjoying the beauty. We're on the west side, so it's very shaded. There's lots of oak trees. There's a creek that runs pretty much year round. There's a swimming pool. So we keep the kids cool in the shade and in the water.
Wow, that sounds like so much fun to be outside and under the stars. Is everybody outside? Is there any way that somebody might be inside, or is that just a part of the camp experience to be out under the stars, which is great?
Everyone is outdoors. So wow. I was the camp director for many, many summers. And yeah, all from the youngest camper to the camp director, we are sleeping outside under the stars. We do have screened in, we call them buildings, but they're really like a screened in porch for our healthcare facility. So we have an on-site nurse or doctor at all times to take care of any needs. So that's more of an indoor space, but it's screened. And then our dining hall is shaded with screen walls. So it feels indoors compared to the rest, but not really indoors.
Well, that is great, because you talk about getting all the fresh air and wonderful outside experience that you can with that. You know, you mentioned just briefly a healthcare facility, which is really important, I think, for people to know that you have that. And I did see something on your website that you were looking for some medical people to help you out.
Our healthcare volunteers are critical. They are most commonly parents of a camper. And one of the benefits is that they get to bring their camper at no cost to the program for their service to the camp. And they must be a nurse or doctor licensed in California. And they are responsible for checking in with parents at drop-off and taking care of any health concerns that the parent might have, and administering medications and being there for any first aid that's needed on site. They are there to support just the health and safety of the kids and staff.
So, Emily, how has COVID affected the camp? And are you requiring people to be vaccinated to come there?
Yeah, so, well, in 2020, of course, all overnight camps were shut down. So we did not run an overnight program in 2020. In 2021, fortunately, as I've already described, everything at Camp Natoma is outdoors, which was fantastic for meeting all of the needs to keep campers safe and healthy at Camp Natoma. So we are in a fortunate situation where not only are we entirely outdoors, but we're cohorted naturally by our activities into smaller groups. And the hot, dry air is not ideal climate for COVID to spread. So Camp Natoma is a great place in the summer in terms of that kind of health and safety. We don't yet know what the mandates will be for requirements this summer. Last summer, we did have our staff all vaccinated. They weren't available to all youth last summer, but most of our teenagers were able to make that choice. So we don't quite know yet, but we know that our existing conditions are pretty good for camp.
Yes, I guess you are getting ready to face the brand new camping season again after all of this. You had to be closed down for a little bit. So when are you going to start camping again?
Our campsite is not used by camper programs during the winter time, given that we're entirely outdoors. But we start up again in the springtime with volunteer opportunities for families and adults to come out and help with facility maintenance projects, everything from weed whacking, miles and miles of hiking trails, to construction projects, plumbing, electrical, everything to bring back camp from the nature's wrath of winter. And then we'd start doing our custom programs on the weekends in late spring into our summer week-long programs.
Well, that sounds exciting. What if somebody wants to volunteer with you? What would they need to do?
Yeah, give us a call or send us an email or do some live chat on our website. And then we can connect you with our director of operations, who would get you set up with a type of volunteer work that would work for you, whether that's on site at the camp or some other project.
So once you get up there, what kind of things do the campers get to do?
I like to start with this idea that when I ask my middle school and high school participants, what is it that makes you want to come back to Camp Natoma? They say two things. They say, it feels like home, it feels like a special home for me. And I can be my real self at Camp Natoma because I'm accepted for who I am. And I think that that kind of overarchingly summarizes what we do with kids, is we help them form relationships with each other and with our staff members who are their role models and mentors, to dive into what are their goals in life? What are their passions? What fills them up in terms of activities? And how can we expose them to stepping a little bit out of their comfort zone to try something new? Maybe that's a challenge hike. They've never been in this kind of wilderness environment or away from home, or maybe they found their spot by performing skits and songs on the stage at the campfire at night. Our teenagers actually enroll in a multiple week leadership program, which builds with self-confidence and public speaking skills and everything in between, with so much of that immersion in nature. There's no cell phones, there's no computers. They're really engaged in face-to-face interaction day to day. They have to live in a community environment. They take care of each other. They have to make group decisions, all while doing super fun things like learning how to make bracelets, learning how to throw hatchets, trying archery, making wilderness skills a part of their life, maybe learning how to build a shelter or build a campfire, navigating like GPS systems and compasses. So lots of different types of activities to give kids a chance to learn more about themselves.
If you are just joining us, this is The Nonprofit Story, and I'm Dr. Consuelo, your host. I'm speaking with Emily Zibin, the Executive Director of Friends of Natoma, and we're talking about Camp Natoma. Emily, I mean, it just sounds like an incredibly well-rounded, well-structured program, probably a lot more in the camp experience than people actually knew was available in this area. And you've been around now for 80 years. Tell us how things have changed over the years.
Talking about what camp was like in 1941, in one dimension, camp is so different because the world around it is so different. In 1941, it was an all-girls camp, and the skills they were hoping to foster in those girls were valuable in those times, but the rustic nature of the camp was the foundation. Now here in 2022, the number one thing after the pandemic, or yeah, still in the pandemic, that parents wanted to do is, I need my kid off of their screen and socially engaged and physically active.
Makes
and
sense.
And this is the thing that Camp Natoma has done for 80 years. We are socially engaged at a really core level. We're engaged in nature and we are tech free. So as the world has changed, the purpose of Natoma has still stayed relevant and things have changed and we've added some new activities. But then when I speak to an alumni, for example, I have a woman who was a camper in 1941 and she's still actively involved.
Wow.
And she is so grateful that we are still sleeping under the stars and that we're still singing silly camp songs around the campfire. And that we're still letting kids creek walk and boulder hop through Franklin Creek. And so the meaningfulness and that grandparents and great-grandparents can now see children doing activities that they valued as a child, but maybe impacting their life in even a different way is kind of the evolution of the 80 years.
I know that you're making sure that the camp is inclusive for those that have special accessibility needs.
Yeah, we want Camp Natoma, as I started earlier in the show to say, we really serve kids in San Luis County. We want anyone, any child to be able to experience Camp Natoma. We want them to do it safely. We want them to feel welcomed on all levels. And it is my job and my staff's job to recruit to families who may have never considered summer camp as a place for their child and help them find a good fit in one of our programs and prepare them. I think that it comes with expectations to make sure that kids that have needs that may not first feel safe going to camp can talk to us ahead of time. We're there through the whole process with you to prepare and make sure those expectations work.
Tell us about the food. Who cooks the food? Do you bring your own? How does that happen?
Oh, food is so fun and so important at Camp Natoma. First of all, being outside all day and hiking, I mean, it's not flat. There's hills. You've been there.
Yes, I have.
They're swimming, they're hiking, they're playing. Kids are hungry at camp. We got to feed a lot of food. We have a full commercial kitchen and we have a food service vendor. And we also have some great partnerships with different farms and the food bank in order to get fresh produce. Mm-hmm. Our kitchen staff primarily is recruited from Cal Poly's food science and nutrition department. And we help support Cal Poly's mission of learn by doing. And we have Cal Poly students working in our kitchen, cooking from scratch, three meals a day. And that's a hot meal in the dining hall on the table. Every meal during the whole week is different. We try to make it as kid friendly and also as densely nutrient because they are hungry.
Well, now, it says also that groups can come to the camp and have an experience. How does that happen? And are they provided with food? And is it all outdoors or is there something different?
Yeah, custom programs at Camp Natoma are an adapted version of our week-long programs. So depending on the size of the group and the ages and desires of the outcome of that program, we completely customize it to their needs. Typically, they're shorter, their weekends, because it's fall and springtime. And we serve adults, teens, families, kids, and it can be any combination of the activities that are part of our summer program adapted to their group's needs. We provide the food. We provide the staffing as needed. And it's a mix of their purpose to get more kids to be able to enjoy the experience at Camp Natoma.
So would that be just clubs or churches or organizations? Anyone can call and see when they can have a weekend up there?
It's primarily scout groups and other youth nonprofit groups, private schools and churches and things like that.
And I just want to touch a little bit on the job experiences that you offer for people. Are those some of the campers who are able to go into some leadership training positions, or other people can apply for jobs also?
So our high schoolers are participating in a leadership program, but our staff, they must be 18 years of age or older, and they go through an extensive background check and training process. But many of our staff have attended Camp Natoma as a child, and we recruit heavily from local colleges to bring in young adults that can be mentors and role models for the kids. And the job application is actually currently available in January. Our hiring is January through March for the summer season. It is more than just a job. It is life skills. It is, some people will say, the hardest job you've ever loved, because they're committing their hearts to the children and they are facilitating the community living. But it's a paid position, it's a competitive position, and your food and accommodations are provided for the 8 to 10 weeks of employment.
So you mentioned earlier that some students can get scholarships and there is a fee. Do you take donations from the community to help you with students that might need some help to come to the camp?
Yes, we call it a campership program. It's a financial aid system to allow families to complete an application to apply to reduce their fees. And we rely on community foundations and individuals and businesses to donate to that fund. And then we are able to serve many, many campers a reduced fee that's offset by the generous donations of our community.
Do you need any other types of donations?
The biggest way that we can help Camp Natoma, besides a financial donation towards camperships or towards general supplies, is skilled individuals who want to come out to the camp and help prepare it for summer. Thousands of hours of work. It includes things like weed whacking and construction trades and lots of cleaning. So there's a job for everyone, and you get to camp and stay if you'd like, or come out for the day. And it's a really magical group and community to be out there in the springtime preparing the facility.
Sounds like a great way to spend your time. And you said those opportunities are open now. So tell us about your website, how we can find out more about Camp Natoma.
Yes, it's campnatoma.org. And on there, you'll find some fun videos that do a flyover of the camp to give you a glimpse into what it feels like to be at camp. Of course, a place to enroll a camper and contact us regarding volunteer opportunities or sign up to our volunteer days. Week-long summer starts in June, but we have volunteer opportunities starting in April.
I've been speaking with Emily Zibin.
Friends of Camp Natoma is the locally based nonprofit that operates the camp. And we are not a membership organization, but we, of course, have volunteer committees, a board of directors, and opportunities to get involved.
So people can get involved in a lot of different ways with this incredible, wonderful 80-year-old camp that's right in our area. Emily, I want to thank you so much for coming to the Nonprofit Story today to tell us all about Camp Natoma.
No, thank you so much for having me.
I'm Dr. Consuelo, your host. This is the Nonprofit Story.
And finally, there's still time to enjoy the bounty of persimmons this season. There are two main types here on the Central Coast, and it is crucially important to know how to tell them apart. Father Ian is playing with food. This episode is from the KCBX archives.
I rent a house in San Luis, and there is a persimmon tree in the backyard. I somehow got the impression that being bountiful was a characteristic of persimmons. So when I realized that I had a persimmon tree, I immediately knew that it was going to be a challenge. You see, I believe wasting food is unethical and immoral, so I naturally want to find good uses for each and every persimmon on that tree. Fortunately, I have a natural distribution center that is my church. It is also an opportunity to do some really fun playing with food. First, I had to find out what these oranger-than-orange fruits are and where they came from. So I met up with an expert in a diner in Santa Maria.
Good morning, Father Ian. Thank you so much for having me here today. My name is Alicia Taff, and I represent the California Rare Fruit Growers Central Coast Chapter. The persimmon that most folks are familiar with are the hachia and the fuyu. The hachia being the heart-shaped or pointy-ended fruit, and the fuyu being the more squatty, almost pumpkin-shaped fruit that's hard. They were imported, brought in probably in with a lot of migrant workers, Japan, and also China. Persimmons are indigenous from those areas. We have the luxury of enjoying those fruits here today. Persimmons are extraordinarily hardy. They tolerate extreme cold. They love the heat. And they are prolific producers. They're not difficult to grow. If they're happy in your area, you'll have more fruit than you know what to do with.
Alicia had more to say about the production and distribution of this Japanese delight.
They require adequate water. I wouldn't say they're drought tolerant in that regard. They require adequate water. They grow on the Central Coast. They grow inland in the Central Valley. You can grow them where it's very cold. So they do remarkably well. They're prolific. I think it takes them a little while to get established. I mean, at least the people that I am around, we know about persimmons. I think because it's not a common fruit, it isn't an orange, apple, or a pear, you know, a banana. But more people are getting to know about it and realize that it's healthful for you. It's a wonderful tree to have in your yard because it does produce so much. You can share with your neighbors. You can bake and cook with them. There are numerous commercial producers here in California. In terms of commercial production for hachia, the challenge is that people like to buy a product and then eat it right away. They're just ready to go. Hachias aren't designed that way. Hachias need to be bledded. And what that means is before all of this cross, transcontinental shipping, people would wait until the fruit frosted on the tree. And once it frosted hard, the fruit gets very soft. And that removes the astringency from the fruit. And then you're able to eat it as is. You basically, a lot of people just cut it and scoop it out with a spoon. It's delectable. Or they would make it into the puddings, the cakes, the cookies, you name it. So the hachias require that they are extraordinarily soft, like an avocado that you wouldn't want to eat. So they have to be very soft. So that makes it difficult for you sitting on the fruit at home. A lot of times they don't get shipped because people don't know what to do with them and they think the fruit has gone bad by the time that it's soft. But it's not. That's the prime opportunity to do something with the hachia fruit.
And what else is interesting is that there isn't really anything more to say about persimmons. They are a fruit. They are from Japan. There are two kinds. Hachia persimmons, the ones that look like a giant orange acorn, need to ripen, like Alicia said, until they are very difficult to handle, like an overripe tomato. When I gave them away at church, I took them in hard and warned people to make sure they got super soft before they eat them. It also means that I either have to eat them or cook with them. I can't store them. So what do I do? Here's what Alicia had in mind.
So when you have a prolific producing plant, the question is, what do I do with all of this, right? Sometimes, this is fabulous, in Japan, they do what's called a hoshigaki style persimmon. So they take the hard hachia persimmon and peel it, and then they hang it by the calyx, which is the stem on top. And they go through and they massage the fruit, which allows the sugar to come out and it preserves the fruit. So rather than wait till everything is soft and squishy and you can't do anything with it, they actually preserve the fruit in that manner. It's delicious, absolutely delicious. We do that at home, at my house. My husband peels the fruit by hand. We use an apple peeler, which is a lot of fun. And then he hangs the fruit until it's dried. And then we actually stuff it with pecans, which is delicious. Then that keeps a lot longer.
The curry sounds really nice, but I'm not going to peel and hang them. And I'm certainly not going to massage them. When I looked online to see what the Japanese do with them, I got a bit worried. Their way of preserving them results in something that looks like a dead mouse. Judy Starr of Star Ranch Winery outside of Paso Robles has a driveway lined with persimmons. Maybe she has some suggestions.
They are mostly hachia persimmons. On the driveway, I'd say there are about 4 fuyu persimmon trees. Now, fuyus are very easy to deal with because they're like an apple. You can eat them when they're crisp, fresh off the tree, bite right into them. They're delicious. But you can't eat hachia persimmons when they are crisp because they're very, very astringent. They will make your mouth pucker in the most unpleasant sort of way. The only way you can eat a fresh hachia persimmon that is palatable is if it is so ripe that it has the consistency of a water balloon. It's very, very, very soft. It's like yogurt. In fact, it makes a nice yogurt accompaniment. The problem with hachias is that they have to go to the store when they're hard. So when you see them in the markets, they're quite hard. People take them home, they bite into them, they say, I don't like that. And why would they like that? Because it's much, much too bitter. As a ripe product, they're too fragile to ship. So it's a difficult marketing thing for persimmons. When I came here 16 years ago and I acquired the persimmon line driveway by accident, I was stunned by the fact that there was so much fruit going to waste. My daughter was living here, so we set about determining what we could do with those persimmons. We bought a small kitchen dehydrator, and we peeled them with an apple peeler, which was a very tedious task, and we dried them, and we found out that they were actually quite delicious. So the first year, we had this tedious operation whereby we dried them, and we actually brought them in when they were firm, because you can only slice them when they're firm, and they're also not palatable. So what made us do it, I'm not quite sure. We realized that what happened if you dried them at a low temperature and very slowly for a long period of time, that they ripen, essentially. So the flavor of a dried persimmon becomes that of, it's almost pumpkin-like, pumpkin sweet potato, but very, very, very sweet. But sweet in a more vegetable way, not sweet like a dried apple or that kind of sweet. So it's what I call a savory sweet. Being in the wine business, that was a plus because they're actually quite good with wine. So it was a discovery that we made just because we felt we had to find something to do with them. And I have looked for dried persimmons and found dried persimmons in many Whole Foods stores and large grocery stores. But for the most part, they tend to be fuyus. I personally don't think that the fuyus are as flavorful as the haichias, and they don't make as pretty a dried product as the haichias. The haichias are a very vibrant, beautiful orange, very seasonal for the time of year in which they ripen. The fuyus, once they're dried, turn sort of a brownish color, so they don't have that really pretty, pretty, pretty orange that you get in the haichias. When we're finished, I do 400 to 600 pounds of dried persimmons a year. I think, generally speaking, it takes 8 pounds of raw product to make 1 pound of dried fruit. If I want 400 pounds of dried persimmons, that means I need 3,200 pounds of fruit to produce that. That's roughly a ton and a half. After we've picked a ton and a half of fruit, it looks like we've taken nothing from the driveway.
There you go. Someone else who was playing with food, playing with persimmons, and came up with a sideline business. I tasted the dried persimmons. They are very, very tasty. It was stunningly beautiful to drive along the S-shaped road, flanked by leafless trees with what seemed like bright orange Christmas decorations. When looking for others who were doing creative dishes with persimmons, I came across a restaurant in Los Alamos, Valle Fresh, run by Chef Conrad Gonzalez.
So persimmons for us is a seasonal fruit ingredient that we like to use during this time, all from a local farm. We've pickled them and we've also made salsa out of them. So we use it as a garnishment on the tacos. We'll do like a smoked salmon with a persimmon salsa. For us, the fuyu works perfect because the texture is really good. It's almost like the texture of an unripe tomato. It cuts well, it lends well for a pico de gallo style salsa. I've also pickled them, a quick pickled version, and it holds up pretty well. But as far as like the other kinds, I would do maybe a jelly or a chutney. That would probably work really well, and you can can that and it will hold for years. You know, I would probably mix it with maybe something of like a pork, but also use some type of vinegar also with it, maybe like a pickled vegetable of some sort, pickled onion or jalapeno. Maybe you're getting the pork, the fattiness from the pork, the sweet, and then the spicy. That would probably lend very well, yes.
Unfortunately, I can't do that kind of salsa with the type of persimmons I have. But I might be able to do the more saucy type of salsa, and I'm not going to make jelly. It is so very orange, I can't believe it. So I'm going to smell it first. It doesn't really have a smell. It has a smell of fruit. It just smells like fruit. And I'm going to taste it. And do I have a chaser somewhere? Just in case it's not very good. Here we go. Again, like its smell, it tastes like fruit. It doesn't taste like anything else but fruit. It's good.
It's sweet, not super sweet, but sweeter than most things. It's probably on par with a ripe peach. From 7 very overripe persimmons that I put in the blender with the peel and the seeds and everything. I didn't do anything but take the stem off, blended them up, pushed them through a sieve. I now have about 6 cups of bright orange pulp ready to be used for something. So here we go. I now have enough pulp to last me the rest of my life. I really need to figure out what to do with it. Sure, I'll make some cookies for coffee hour at church, but what else? I'll try making a saucy salsa.
If you think about it, not all salsas in Mexican restaurants are chunky. There are smooth ones as well. So I'm going to see what I can do to take some sweet and some heat and mix it up to make something really nice. So what I'm going to do here is take some pulp from the chia persimmon, some serrano chili, some cilantro, and see if it can be a nice dipping sauce, and then maybe mix it with a vegetable for a side dish. And of course, I have a tendency to use what's in my fridge. So I just happen to have this mixture of celery, onions, and parsley, and then I've got some puree, and then I've got a serrano, some garlic, and I'm going to put it all in the blender with a little bit of tomato as well, and the cilantro. It tastes like a sweet jam of persimmons with cilantro and serrano in it. It's not bad, but it didn't really change the character very much. Maybe I need to make it hotter. I'm gonna put some more serrano in it and see what happens. That changed it a little bit. Put the lid back on and let it sit for a while, because with all sauces, the flavors need to meld.
I tried various ways of making the salsa to my liking. It's just too sweet. So I left it in the fridge for about a week while I thought about what to do with it. Conrad in Los Alamos suggested working with pork and jalapenos. Let's see what I can do in that milieu. I found a Middle Eastern chutney recipe that I'm going to make as a sauce.
I'm going to use about 2 cups of the puree. I'm going to skip the sugar that's involved in this recipe because I can always add it later. I'm going to use a little bit of cider vinegar, some lemons, skip the raisins, a little bit of ginger root. This recipe calls for a lot. Cinnamon, ground pepper, cumin, salt, ground cardamom, which you have to find in a specialty shop, ground coriander, star anise, and some cloves. Throw that all in the pot, let it boil, and then start working on all the other parts of the meal. I cooked a pork chop under the broiler just with plain salt and pepper because I wanted to see how the sauce worked with it. I sauteed myself some spinach with garlic and onions, and I made myself some brown rice. I'm serving it with a drier red wine to balance the sweetness, and we'll see how it goes. And the true test is in the tasting. So a little bite of just the pork chop, which is perfectly done. The persimmon sauce, which now looks like pumpkin puree because of the spices that I put in it. Absolutely perfectly balanced. The sauce by itself is wonderful with those spices from the Middle East. It was still sweet when it was in the pan. I didn't add any of the sugar that the chutney recipe called for. This combination isn't sweet and meat at all. It's a really wonderful, warm combination. And I take a drink of my Argentinian Malbec. It all seems perfect. I think I've made something here.
And I tried another Middle Eastern way of using persimmons.
I've been thinking about what kind of main dishes have sweet fruit in them, and I'm thinking about things that might have pears or apples, even orange juice or something like that. Sticky ribs came to mind, but I don't think I have the time to put together some sticky ribs. And to be honest, I'm not really good at cooking ribs anyway. But I do know that in the Middle East, they do like lamb and some type of fruit. So I liked that sauce that I had with the pork. I think I'm going to do kofta, lamb meatballs, simmered in a persimmon sauce with some nice earthy spices in it. So I've got my ground lamb here from the store. Garlic, red pepper, black pepper, cumin, some onions, a little bit of water, and a teaspoon of salt. And I'm going to mix that all up and fry them and then simmer them in the sauce. I've made the lamb mixture for the kofta. Put all the spices in it, dusted them with a little bit of flour, and now I'm going to fry them in some hot oil. After searing them a bit, I've taken them out and dabbed them and taken the oil out of the pan, but I kept the scrapings in the pan to give the flavor there. And then I took the puree that I made that's been sitting with the spices in it and the spices melding and getting more flavorful, and I've poured that back into the pan and put the meatballs in it to simmer until they're done all the way through. And then I'm going to serve them with some rice and perhaps a side of sautéed spinach, because that's what I have in the fridge. So we've got this beautiful meal here of basmati rice and these meatballs with persimmon sauce with my side of spinach, and we're going to give it a taste. This is really nice. As I said in the beginning, I'm not a real fan of sweet and meat or fruit and meat, but this is really nice because their persimmons, when they cook down, lose a little bit of their sweetness, but gain a little bit of savoriness and complement the gamey flavor of the lamb. I think I've done a good job here, and I think I would recommend this. And what it's making me think is, the next thing I'm going to try, I think I'm going to try persimmon braised pulled pork. I've got a lot of persimmons, so putting a pork butt in a crock pot with persimmon puree, if I can come up with something like this, I think we've got a winner.
Those two recipes were winners, definitely. Working with persimmons in main dishes involves figuring out how to balance the incredible sweetness of the fruit.
Circle right, do ho do ho, circle right, do ho do ho, circle right, do ho do ho, shake them simmons down. Circle left, do ho do ho, circle left, do ho do ho, circle left, do ho do ho, shake them simmons down.
I don't want anyone to shake down any more persimmons. I have plenty, thanks. Playing with food in a way that deals with the sweetness got me thinking, and I still have that salsa in the fridge.
This salsa is never going to be to my liking, so what do I do with it? I've got about 2 cups here, maybe 1.5 cups. I have decided that I'm going to try Hichia persimmon pulled pork. So I'm going to take this salsa with some tomato sauce, with the spices that you would use for pulled pork, and put it in the crock pot. So here we go. Here I am. Several hours later, 8.5 to be exact, and I'm going to try this pulled pork with persimmons. It's got about 2 cups of persimmon pulp. It's got all the spices and the serrano that I put into the salsa. I put in 1/2 can of tomatoes and a little bit of tomato paste, some cumin, coriander, black pepper, salt, paprika. Here we go. That's kind of nice. It's different. All the flavors blended into something very different than you expect, because you can't really taste persimmon, but you can't taste tomato. And I think I actually magically blended some spices together, which I've never done before, to create something new. Let me taste some of the sauce. Wow. There's no hint of sweetness at all, but it's not bitter like you'd have if you had tomatoes. I think I made a new creation, and that's what playing with food is all about.
This has been a successful playing with food. I didn't think that I would be able to make anything except cookies, cake, and bread. The next potluck, I'll start the pulled pork earlier so I can get feedback from others. I have about 10 containers of pulp in my freezer, all measured out into 2 cups each. I don't know if I'll have the stamina each year to process the persimmons. The persimmon tree is stunningly beautiful when the fruit is ripe. I understand why people grow them. The fruit is tasty, but the quantity is overwhelming. If you have a persimmon tree, there are loads of ways to prepare them. When your neighbors won't take any more of them, pulp them and freeze it. Alicia considers us lucky.
We can grow just about anything here in California, and we're so blessed to have the variety of fruits and vegetables that we do. And persimmons at this time of the year are so special. If you think about it, way back in the day, what fresh thing were you gonna get after it frosted? What fresh fruit or vegetable were you gonna get? Nothing. So that's what makes the persimmon kind of special. You were still gonna get a fresh, sweet fruit treat at this very cold and stark time of the year. So that was important, you know, before we had shipping and refrigeration and storage. And so the people figured out how not to waste these precious gifts.
This is Issues and Ideas for KCBX, Public Radio for the Central Coast.
That was Father Ian. Playing with Food. You've been listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. Gary Eyster composed our theme music. A special thanks to all our guests and contributors this week. I'm Carol Tangeman. Join us each Monday from 1 to 2 in the afternoon for more local stories. You can head to our website to learn more about what you heard today or to listen to past segments, kcbx.org.